A new year is full of surprises, but one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, in many parts of the world, it feels like the old political order is crumbling away and it's not being replaced with anything better. Many countries are moving perilously close to totalitarianism. So how to arrest this process and how to come up with something better than that? Taking a more philosophical approach, the journalist Ejaa Temelekaran has written Together, 10 Choices for a Better Now, and she joins us now in News Talk. Ejaa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Before we address your book, what do you think is going on at the moment among most liberal democracies? What's going wrong?
Well, several things are going wrong. And it's, the funny thing is it's happening to all those democracies that are considered to be most mature. I think it's taking its toll. Neoliberalism, the fundamental contract of neoliberalism, is in conflict with the fundamental contract of democracy. So that's why we are going through this. The democratic institutions are collapsing, and in order to hold on to power, the center is becoming more right-wing, more authoritarian. And no democracy is immune to this phenomena. I think that we sometimes call right-wing populism, sometimes call rising authoritarianism, or as I call it, new form of fascism.
But specifically, what's causing that collapse? Is it discontent? Is it a realization that this isn't working?
Well, actually, it is. At its heart stands the fact that there is no democracy when there is no social justice. Therefore, democratic tools, especially the ballot boxes, become manipulative, tools for these strongmen to come to power, to seize power, and to stay in power almost illegitimately. So, this is what's happening. Social justice is disappearing, democracy is disappearing alongside with it.
Though then again, a lot of those people that strongman politics aren't necessarily delivering social justice. So why would people vote for that?
Well, one thing they do is they are turning our social rights into subjects of charity. So our social rights become connected to their political grants. That's why all the strong men that come to power, they first start building this economic web that will keep them in power for quite a long time. It is what Modi does, what Recep Tayyip Erdogan did, and what Trump did in the United States. So these economic ties, this economic web that they distribute political money, is actually keeping them secure in power.
Now, one of the subjects that you deal with in the book, or one of the chapter headings, is anger. And oftentimes, the dialogue we witness is fueled by anger, and people seem to think it's necessary for change for people to be angry. You're a bit more skeptical about that. Is that right?
Yeah, Sean. I mean, like, after writing How to Lose a Country, I've been around the world. The book was published in several languages, so I had the chance to talk to several different audiences in several different countries. So I saw that people are trying to express anger. They are expressing anger constantly against what we are witnessing today. But then I also understood that anger has become a commodity, especially in social media, where engagement through algorithms are designed to keep us angry, in fact. So if anger is a commodity, can we build progressive politics upon emotion that is that can be commodified? I don't think so. That's why in Together, 10 Choices for a Better Now, I suggested that we replace anger with attention, with active attention. Because anger creates this illusion of political engagement, whereas attention, full attention, requires action. Yeah, this is one of the 10 choices I propose in Together.
Yeah, attention to what?
Attention to what's happening behind the scenes, because we are mostly, you know, mesmerized by the spectacle of the outrage, of the outrageous political acts. And once we express our anger, we kind of, you know, feel consumed, exhausted, and that makes us feel like we did something, politically did something. Whereas attention, it is a way to see what's happening. What is the mechanism that creates all these outrageous political acts, political decisions? So if you can understand the mechanism through attention, you can as well find a way to reverse the course of the political process that we are suffering from today.
Yes, certainly. Yes. That chimes in the people, you know, every day you see people just giving out on Twitter or whatever, and they feel that they're exercising some change, but they're just giving out on Twitter, really, rather than making a great difference. At the same time, people are angry on all, you know, across a range of the political spectrum. There are angry people out there who want to send refugees home, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, one of the choices I propose in the book is to replace pride with dignity. I think those people who are angry, they think that refugees or any kind of outsiders are diminishing their national pride. Whereas today, I think we have to think about dignity, because pride is a violent word and it requires someone else to be less prideful. Whereas dignity is something for all. And if it's damaged for one person, it is damaged for all of us. So I think we have to replace pride with dignity. And masses around the world, from Hong Kong to United States in Black Lives Matter protests, they are voicing this concern, voicing this demand. They want dignity, whereas the other masses who are mesmerized by the promises of greatness, they are constantly talking about pride. I think the masses of pride will prevail, should prevail, if we want to live in a better world. Well, actually, if we want to live in a world, person.
Yes. And that
period.
That word pride is often, leaving aside LGBT pride, but pride is often associated with national pride and nationalism.
Absolutely.
Is that always toxic?
Yes, always toxic, especially when it comes in the form of promising greatness, promising the former greatness of a country. These are fairy tales that are so easy to fall for, and it's so delicious for all of us. But we have to understand that what bothers us today in Britain, in United States, in Turkey, everywhere in the world, it's not our pride being broken, but our human dignity. And in order to restore that dignity, one, we have to have faith in humankind. And then second, we have to start acting towards a more just and humane system.
Now, and I suppose that's the tricky bit. You do also have a section called New Politics. How do you recast the way we interact with each other politically?
First of all, I do propose something of a friendship. I am proposing that we can rethink friendship as a political connection rather than party membership or any kind of political alliance. But when it comes to New Politics, I think it's not me proposing it, but it is what's happening in the world at the moment. We see it happening in London, in New York, in Istanbul, in several cities. And now I'm living in Zagreb. It's happening in Zagreb as well. As the national institutions, the institutions of democracy, the central institutions of democracy are collapsing, I see that the new political energy is gathering around local politics. That is why we are seeing more and more municipalities all around the world actually resisting against this new form of fascism, the new authoritarianism. And I think this is going to be the new political way, so to speak. All that energy that went to protests for the last decade will go into the local politics, and they will become this protest movements and, you know, all the resistance, the spontaneous resistance, will channel itself into local politics, and therefore they will be more involved in realpolitik. And I think this is how the world will change, or at least this is one level of it.
Though that resistance might be to a central authority, but it's also putting itself at odds with people who support that central authority, who aren't necessarily people in power. I mean, this... many protest movements seem to spawn an anti-protest protest movement, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, but there is a magic to local politics. It's very humane, and it's supposed to be very human based, and, you know, very how shall I put it, friendly, actually. Because they are face-to-face with people, local politicians. So I do think that something will come up from there. And yes, you're right. They are resisting to the central authority. And as we saw in Turkey, especially in Istanbul lately, it can create a real political conflict. But from that conflict, from that confrontation between the central authority and the local politics, I think something new might come up. And people might support local politicians against the new authoritarian leaders, which will create new leaders and hopefully better ones.
Well, hopefully better ones indeed. Ece Temelkören is the author of Together, 10 Choices for a Better Now. Ece, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you for having me.
Moncrief on News Talk.